Welcome to today's deep dive. I am your host, and today we are tackling something pretty wild.
Hey, everyone. And yeah, I'm the resident expert here. And I have to say, this topic is, it's really shaking up the financial world right now.
It totally is because, okay, I want you, the listener, to imagine waking up, grabbing your phone, and selling exactly 2.5% of the commercial high-rise down your street before you've even finished your morning coffee.
Which is, you know, completely unheard of historically.
Exactly. Our mission today is to crack the code on how to get exposure to real estate without having to, like, buy a whole building or deal with leaky roofs yourself.
Yeah.
Historically, real estate is just this slow-moving, illiquid Goliath.
Right. You either needed $50 million or you parked your money in some massive fund and you just forgot about it for a decade.
Right. But right now, this entirely new digital infrastructure is trying to turn that concrete into something liquid. And to really figure this out, we're pulling from a huge stack of sources today.
Yeah, we have a really detailed breakdown called Real Estate Tokenization versus Private Equity Property. And we're supplementing that with insights from the World Economic Forum, Deloitte, PwC, and Investopedia.
So whether you're actively trying to figure out how to diversify your own assets or you're just, you know, insanely curious about how digital tech is changing brick and mortar investments, this deep dive is for you. We are going to break down the exact operational and financial differences between the traditional old guard and this new digital frontier.
It really is a massive operational shift.
It feels like we are comparing a highly exclusive country club with a brand new digital public square. So let's unpack the foundational structures of both. To start us off, can you explain the traditional heavyweight here? Private equity.
Yeah, absolutely. So private equity real estate, or PE, has been around for decades. It's essentially a pooled investment vehicle. You have these professional fund managers who go out and collect capital from investors.
Right, like a big pot of money.
Exactly, a massive pot of money. And they deploy it into huge projects. We're just talking massive commercial buildings, major residential developments, infrastructure.
But the key here is the ownership structure, right?
Yes, exactly. In private equity, investors do not own individual properties.
Okay, so what do they own?
They hold units in the fund itself. So your returns come from the overall rental income or asset appreciation, or whenever the fund eventually sells the properties in that massive portfolio.
It's kind of like a pre-fixed menu curated by a famous chef. You know, you trust the chef, the fund manager in this case, to make all the strategic decisions and buy the right ingredients, but you have literally zero say in what gets cooked.
That is a great way to put it. You're entirely hands-off.
But with this hands-off approach, don't investors lose a ton of transparency regarding the underlying assets? I mean, you don't really know what you own.
Oh, completely. You lose a lot of transparency. I mean, the trade-off is that PE provides professional asset management, right? And you get a instantly diversified portfolio.
Yeah.
But your visibility into specific properties is basically non-existent.
Which is fine if you completely trust the chef, but trusting that famous chef is great until you see the cover charge to get into the restaurant, right? The historical barrier to entry is just massive.
It is. And that capital barrier is exactly what's driving the rise of our second model, which is tokenization.
Let's get into that because the capital requirements for PE funds are kind of insane for the average person.
Oh, yeah. We are talking minimums that usually range from tens of thousands to, honestly, millions of dollars.
Wow, millions.
Yeah, which obviously restricts access mostly to institutional investors, family offices, and super high net worth individuals. The everyday investor is completely locked out.
Enter tokenization. So according to the PwC and World Economic Forum reports we read, tokenization uses digital financial infrastructure to divide property investments into smaller fractional digital units.
Right, units that are linked directly to an underlying asset.
So if I'm visualizing this, it's like taking a massive skyscraper, slicing it into thousands of digital puzzle pieces, and letting anyone buy just one little piece.
That's exactly it. You're fractionalizing the physical asset using blockchain technology.
Okay, but I have to push back here. Does this fractional approach actually change what you own? Or is it just changing the price tag? Like, am I just buying a cheaper version of a blind fund?
No, and that's the crucial difference. It fundamentally changes the ownership structure. Instead of pooling your money into a blind fund where the manager picks the assets, tokenization is a segmented structure.
Segmented meaning?
Meaning the digital units represent economic participation tied directly to a specific real estate asset.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you aren't buying a generic unit of a fund. You hold a digital token that represents a legal fractional share of say, a specific residential building in downtown Austin. It offers so much more direct visibility.
Okay, so because tokenization actually changes what you own, going from a blind fund to specific digital puzzle pieces, it has to radically alter how an investor actually goes about building their portfolio, right? You're making very different choices.
Radically alters it. It completely shifts how capital is deployed. Look at PE. It's gradual deployment. You commit fixed capital upfront, but the manager basically spends it over time as they find opportunities.
You're just waiting around for them to do something with your money.
Exactly. But with tokenized real estate, investors suddenly have total allocation control. You can log on, review individual opportunities, and immediately distribute your capital across different specific assets.
So you're building your own custom portfolio on the fly.
Right. You could put 10% in an office building in London, 20% in an apartment complex in Miami. It's immediate and highly specific.
But wait, isn't there a huge risk of having too much control? Because in a PE fund, the pros are doing the homework. They have teams of analysts. With tokenization, am I just, you know, blindly guessing which digital building is a good bet?
That is the ultimate catch. And the source material validates this pushback strongly. Deloitte and Investopedia both point out that regardless of how accessible this digital model is, the burden of due diligence shifts entirely to you, the investor.
Yikes. So no one is holding your hand.
Nobody. You have to carefully evaluate the asset quality, the governance structures, the financial projections. A sleek digital token doesn't protect you from a bad physical investment.
Right. If the roof caves in on that building in Austin, your token loses value just the same.
Exactly. You have to do the underwriting yourself before you commit any capital.
Okay, so if tokenization gives the investor the steering wheel to pick specific assets, the next logical question anyone will have is, how easily can I get out of the car? Which brings us to this critical puzzle of time horizons and liquidity.
And this is where the friction between the digital world and the physical world gets really intense. Because real estate is, by its very nature, a long-term strategy.
Right. Physical buildings take time to generate value. You have to collect rent, wait for neighborhood appreciation, maybe do renovations.
Exactly. And PE funds reflect this reality. They have these defined 5 to 10 year or even longer investment cycles. Your money is locked up while the managers acquire, improve, and eventually exit the properties.
The classic illiquidity premium. Your money is trapped. But tokenized models introduce this new potential flexibility, right?
Potential is the key word there. Tokenization aims to support secondary trading environments. The idea is that you can transfer or sell your digital units to other participants without waiting 10 years.
But
this digital trading infrastructure is still heavily evolving.
Yeah, I really want to warn you, the listener, about a major psychological trap here. When people hear the words digital and token, they immediately think of crypto day trading, right?
Oh, totally. They expect it to act like a tech stock.
But here's where it gets really interesting. You cannot day trade a physical shopping mall, can you?
No, you really can't. And that's what we call the liquidity illusion. Huh. You have the digital wrapper that can move at the speed of light, but the underlying asset is still concrete and steel.
It's a physical building sitting on physical dirt.
Exactly. So while tokenization offers the concept of liquidity through these evolving secondary markets, it fundamentally still has to be viewed as a long-term investment. If there aren't enough buyers on that secondary market when you want to sell, your token is just as illiquid as a paper deed.
So it's not a magic bullet.
Not at all. It's a massive technological upgrade, but it doesn't change the laws of physical real estate.
Okay, so given that these digital units require careful asset evaluation, like we talked about, but they offer this new theoretical liquidity, I mean, the average investor needs a reliable way to actually navigate this new digital infrastructure, right? Without needing a computer science degree to understand blockchain ledgers.
Right, because nobody wants to manually read smart contracts just to buy a piece of an apartment building. And that is exactly where digital investment ecosystems are stepping in to modernize market access.
Right, the platforms.
Exactly. The source material specifically points to platforms like Osul Gamma as prime examples of this bridging technology.
Okay, so what exactly do these platforms do? Because the technical side of tokenization sounds like a compliance nightmare.
It is a nightmare, if you do it yourself. But these platforms simplify the entire process. They reduce the operational barriers that are traditionally associated with direct property investing or, you know, dealing with complex PE fund structures.
So they do the heavy lifting in the background.
Yes. They handle the regulatory structuring, the smart contracts, all the back-end blockchain mechanics. Mm-hmm. And they present these clearly structured investment opportunities to the user.
Like a menu.
Basically, they link the digital tokens to the real estate assets and allow investors to allocate their capital efficiently through a really clean interface.
Okay, so platforms like Osul Gamma act as a highly curated digital storefront. You log in, you see the buildings, you see the yields. But doesn't abstracting the real estate into a clean digital interface make it a little too easy to forget you're dealing with physical properties? Like, it feels like a video game.
That is a very valid concern. But the source material emphasizes that these platforms are designed to maintain the core fundamentals of real estate investing. They aren't trying to gamify the asset class.
Right.
They display all the vital stats, occupancy rates, historical cash flows, the property sponsor's track record. They just remove the massive friction of direct property acquisition and all that dense private equity legalese.
So it's basically putting a user-friendly dashboard on top of a very traditional, very physical asset class.
Precisely. It bridges the gap between the speed of the digital world and the reality of the physical one.
All right, this has been an incredible breakdown. Let's synthesize the key takeaways from all our sources for the listener. So on one side, we have private equity. It offers professional management, totally hands-off diversified portfolios, but it demands really high capital minimums and a strict 5 to 10 year commitment.
Right, the traditional rigid model.
And on the other side, we have tokenization. It completely drops the capital barrier. It offers visibility into specific assets, and it introduces potential secondary market liquidity.
Right.
But it requires you, the investor, to actively select and rigorously evaluate your own assets. You have to do the homework.
Which means deciding between these two models really comes down to you. It depends on your personal financial resources, your specific investment objectives, and exactly how involved you want to be in the day-to-day property market.
It's all about your own risk tolerance and time commitment.
Absolutely.
Well, before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final provocative thought. Something that wasn't explicitly in the source material, but builds directly on this whole concept of token liquidity.
Oh, I like where this is going.
So imagine if these tokenized secondary markets fully mature,
yeah,
right? Allowing the digital shares of physical buildings to literally change hands daily, globally. How might that extreme financial fluidity fundamentally change how physical cities are built? Think about it. If the economic ownership of your entire neighborhood can literally shift overnight on a digital exchange, moving from a local investor to 1,000 anonymous wallets halfway across the world in seconds, what happens to our traditional understanding of a community?
That is a wild thought. The physical neighborhood stays the same, but the ownership is constantly flowing like water.
Exactly. It completely redefines what local ownership even means. Well, lots to think about there. Thank you all for joining us on this deep dive. Keep an eye on the skyline, and we will catch you next time.